D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Finnegan here with you on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. The self-proclaimed number one hockey hit on this station. Every week, Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast. Elliot, you write in your latest 32 Thoughts column, quote, Nashville's first three-round picks in 2025 are coveted by teams they talk to, but GM Barry Trotz so far shows no indication to move them. In addition to a center, he's also looking for a top-four defender with a bit of term. And we opened the show talking about where the Predators go from here after a bad road trip and a bad start to the season. So if Barry Trotz is looking to shake things up in the dressing room, which players on the roster could be on their way out in order to make that happen?
You know, honestly, Adam, I really try to be careful with this stuff, because if I'm wrong, like, I don't like being wrong about it. But, you know, I think it's obvious in the sense that there are players who have protection, and I don't know that any of them are going to be interested in waiving. They just got there. They signed deals that work in your market. And also, I was reminded this week, you know, it's a no-tax state. So if you get traded from Nashville to somewhere else that is a tax state, it's a loss on your deal. So that is always a factor in that consideration. I have wondered about some of your younger players. And again, I don't know that I want to say specific names, because teams are so guarded with this. They don't want to throw someone's life into chaos. But look, you can see there's guys who are in and out of the lineup. And I think you always start to wonder, A, how do those players feel about their situation? How the Predators feel about those players? Do those players and some of their representatives feel that maybe a change of scenery is necessary, or it's just not going to work out in Nashville? But those are some of the players I've wondered about.
We saw our first coaching change in the NHL earlier this week.
And also, Adam, I would say this. As to this point, you know, and I think Trotz did say this on Tuesday, he's not interested in moving some of those picks. I think that can always change if the right player comes along, or he can look farther down the road.
We had our first coaching change in the NHL earlier this week, the Bruins firing Jim Montgomery, Joe Sacco, interim head coach. Understandably, Elliot, with the way that the Predators have been playing, when you read stories on who could be on the hot seat next, Andrew Brunette's name does come up a lot. Do you have any sense that his seat is at least warm, and which coach might be the one around the league that could be next on the chopping block?
Well, you know, I listened to the second best hit of hockey hit on your network on Tuesday, and, you know, Trotz did give Brunette, saying that he's not looking to do that. And I think the one thing that I would say is that, being a coach himself and a very good one, Trotz would have he would understand the answering that question, what it means to answer that question that way, and, you know, basically the impact such an answer would have. I don't think Andrew Brunette is suddenly a dumb guy. He did a great job last year. And this year, I think the thing is, you know what Barry Trotz is trying to fix. He's trying to fix the blue line a bit. He's trying to fix the second line center. These are hard things to fix. These are the things that everybody wants and everybody needs. You know, and someone else made a really good point to me. You've got Forsberg, Stamkos, and Marchessault, three really talented players who are similar, and all right-hand shots, all great scorers, and you're trying to find ways to make it work in your lineup. And, you know, there's a person I know who listens to all my hits here. He says that's kind of the one thing that you haven't mentioned, is that They've got this, and they've got to figure out a way to make it all work. And but the one thing I would say is that, look, like, did anybody think that Jim Montgomery was going to be fired 20 games into a season? Nobody thought that. And here we are. So I think everybody recognizes, including Burnett himself, that if things don't get better, all of a sudden the seat gets warmer everywhere. Not just for him, but everywhere. Like, Trotz is talking about moves that nobody thought that he'd have to make this early in a season. So, I've been around long enough to know, and you guys have been around long enough to know, that when you have a year that starts as disappointingly as this one, you try to have patience. You've made a lot of change. But the longer it goes, the more people start to say, okay, well, what do we have to do to fix it?
We'll talk with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. Take a listen to it. It's interesting things that he says on his podcast. Interesting thoughts. Elliot, with that being said, how difficult is it for, because listen, you've amassed this talent through free agency, and then the talent that you already had, you had a system coming in with this talent that you brought in this season. How difficult is it for Coach Bruno to sort of tweak his system a little bit for the guys he had? He may have wanted one thing to happen at the beginning of the season with all these guys, but now clearly whatever he wanted isn't working right now. So how difficult is it for him to tweak the system just a little bit to try to get something going?
Well, I think this. I think that, like I said, I think, Derek, that Anthony's that Andrew Bennett is a really smart guy. I think good coaches, and it's the same as in football, I think good coaches tailor the system to what works with your personnel. And, like, but the one thing to me is, and, like, someone called me this morning, they just can't believe, like, just how much Brady Shea has struggled. He says, like that guy is a better player than he's showing in Nashville. He's a much better player. And I just think that it's like in that particular case, you're completely asking a guy to change the way he plays. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just a really hard thing to do. I think all of us, and I would include myself in that, is like just underestimated how hard that is when you've been wired to play a certain way for years and now it's different. And maybe we all forgot that. And I think that's why the person called me about Marchessault and Forsberg and Stamkos. Like, they're like, you know, I can't remember which game it was, but I saw like Marchessault and Stamkos like playing wing on the same line. And, you know, it's just different from what they're used to. And I just think that everybody here is, like, there's no excuse for some of the way, like, some of these losses have gone. Like, there's no question about that. But I do think that, Derek, it's a good question in the sense that there's a lot of players undergoing a lot of change. And they're playing in places they haven't played before or aren't used to playing, or they're just trying to find ways to make this all work. And I think if we've all been guilty of something, that this was a bigger adjustment than we realized for some of these guys.
Now, Ella, we did have a talk earlier before you came on, a few seconds before you came on, about what can Coach Brunette do to sort of shock this roster, to sort of get guys to play. Now, he's moved guys around in the second, I mean, the third and fourth line, and it may have worked for a quick second, but then they sort of got back to those things that are not beneficial to them as a team. But moving forward, it's like the last thing that he can possibly do is bench one of these guys or move one of these guys down a lineup that they went out and got, whether it's Brady Shea, whether it's Marchessault, guys like that that haven't quite lived up to expectations just yet. But if you do that, because that's one of the last things you can do besides we all know switching head coaches, and they're not doing that. But you have to do something within the locker room to give sort of like a shock and awe to the team. Like, I mean business. But if you do that, do you believe he has to get the backing of his captain, Roman Josi? Because if you do something like that, you may just end up being the hated guy in the locker room, and they may tune you out. But if you get sort of a backing from your captain, maybe it's easier to do that, and maybe it sits on these veteran guys a little bit better.
You know, Derek, it's funny you said that, because I wrote that, I think, a week or two ago, and someone called to me and said, you got to be really careful with this one. Now, I'm watching last night, and, you know, I feel bad for some of the young guys because they're all getting exchanged for each other, right? Like last night, Tomasino plays, Evangelista sits out. And I'm sure these guys, like it's tough on young players, right? Like they feel they're the scapegoats and it's not entirely their fault. And I'm sure their agents behind the scenes are just barking like crazy. But it's like at a certain point in time, like that becomes just like shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic. You've got to go higher. Now, so I wrote this and somebody called me and he said, here's your problem with this. And I said, okay, hit me. And he said, the problem is, like, if you're benching, like, just for argument's sake, you're benching a Shea or a Stamkos or a Marchessault, like they said, like, these are the guys that picked you in free agency. And he said to me, like, a coach should be able to do what he thinks is right. And if he thinks a player isn't performing, then that's the greatest power he has, is taking away the ice time. But he says, like, as an overall organization, you're sitting here and you're saying, okay, what's the reaction going to be internally? Like, you can't worry about the player being upset about not playing. If a player, like, players know who deserves to be in the lineup and who doesn't. They know who's playing well and who's struggling. But what he said to me, you do worry about, and this is a guy who's a manager in the league, he says is, like, this player just picked Nashville in free agency, and Nashville made a good enough offer to get him, and now you're benching him 15 to 20 games into the season. He thinks you do wonder as an organization, or worry as an organization, about the message that sends, and it happens so quickly. Now, I don't know, like, I'm the kind of person, Derek, who I know when I do a good job. I know when I do a bad job. I know when I would know if I deserve to be in the lineup or if I didn't, and that wouldn't bother me aside from the fact I'm not in the lineup. But I do think teams think about that. It's a great question you ask, and Brunette has to do what he thinks is right, and we're probably getting to the point where that may happen, and I thought it might happen already. But I do think teams worry about that with, like, I know everyone's talking about Shea. I know he's taking an absolute, I know he's taken like a beating and I know that nobody probably has eaten up more about it than he is. But I do think teams think about that. Like, this guy just picked us. How do we feel about benching him 20 to 25 games in?
Great stuff. Elliot Friedman is with us. And Elliot, along the front of trying to make a change and calling around, and I listened to Barry Trotz and his perspective, and he seemed to indicate there's maybe only a couple of teams that are coming into the mindset of, okay, it's a quarter of the way through the season, we are ready to actually make a trade. Because I can imagine at this point, if he's ready to try to make a trade on some level, he's finding a hard time finding a lot of teams that have evaluated their roster enough to pull the trigger on something significant.
I think, Willie, that while that may be true, it's also a little bit of poker. Like, the one thing I think is that GMs, they know the league. They know who's doing what. They know how everybody is going. And the biggest challenge for Trotz right now is, I have a saying, Willie, and if you've listened to the pod, you've heard me say it.
Oh, yes.
That when you're drowning, the other guys are not throwing you a life preserver. They're throwing you an anvil. And Trotz, unfortunately, he's in a vulnerable situation right now. He's got a team that he really had a great offseason. There were a lot of high hopes for them. It's not going well. Everybody's kind of in shock. And, you know, the other 31 managers, they know he's in, like, he's not in trouble from like a job sense of or anything like that, but he's in trouble from a result and performance standpoint. And like they're saying, there's sharks in the water. They're like, Barry's in trouble here. You know what? I'm going to say, and a lot of them do think like this, but I'm going to say that, you know, it's not my time, and we'll see. Maybe like the fact that Barry said this week that he's not giving up his, that he's not interested in giving up his first rounders, is that he's getting asked about them. He's like, oh, you'll give me one of your firsts, right? What do you think about one of your firsts? And he doesn't want to do that, at least not right now. And I think that shows you that those other managers right now, they know the Predators are in trouble, and they're like, yeah, I don't have to do anything, but maybe he can make me do something because he gives me something that I want or something that they wouldn't expect. And I think that's the dangerous situation that Trotz is in, because right now he's like the vulnerable fish in the sea, and all the sharks are out circling around him.
Yeah, it's a good point. Elliot, I want to get your perspective on Boston, because I have to tell you, I was shocked. I didn't look at Boston as a team that would do what they did there. And you could see the tone. I'm sure you watched it or read about it. The tone of the press conference for a guy from Massachusetts ascending to become the head coach of the revered team in his area growing up. And it was, he had to be very careful how he said it because of the respect he has for Jim Montgomery. How many times have you come on your show on Hockey Night in Canada or your podcast and said, show me a coach that's not getting saves, and I'll show you a coach that all of a sudden is on the hot seat, which is ironic. That's not happening with the Predators right now, because UC Saros is playing great. But Jeremy Swayman's whole situation and numbers, to me, from afar, that's the glaring problem. And yet Jim Montgomery takes the fall with an unbelievable record.
Yeah, it's I think it's a couple of things. Like Alain Vigneault, who coached a whole bunch of teams. He coached the Rangers, he coached Philly, he coached Vancouver, he coached Montreal. He used to have a line, and he would say it in his, like, because he's French originally, so it always comes out like kind of funny in English. But he would say, if my goaler is better than your goaler, I win, and if your goaler is better than my goaler, you win. That's what he would talk about, basically, hockey came down to. And it's true. Like, you're right about that. If you don't get saves, you're in big trouble for a lot of different reasons. The one thing I think here, the thing that's interesting to me about the whole Montgomery thing is Don Sweeney basically came out yesterday and confirmed something that people had been talking about, and that is that they had entered contract extension discussions with Montgomery and they hadn't worked. And the one thing I've heard a bit in the last 24 hours is that maybe they didn't work, not only because Boston couldn't close the deal, but Montgomery was unsure of staying. And so I think, like, the one thing I'm curious about, like, I think he's a really good coach. Like, his points percentage in Dallas and where the circumstances were obviously different in Boston is excellent. I think he will be coveted. I think he will be wanted out there. And I just wonder if he just was unsure of his own situation there. You know, I think the Bruins, if you look at them on and off the ice in the last few years, they've lost an absolute first ballot Hall of Fame defenseman in Zdeno Chara, and they've lost an absolute first ballot Hall of Fame center, Patrice Bergeron. And not only were those guys great players, but they also ran the room. Chara, the fiery leader, Bergeron, the calm, cool, collected leader. And they ran that place. And I just think that it's a lot of change. I think we've underestimated how much change that, like, they've lost a Hall of Fame defenseman, a Hall of Fame center on the ice, and they've lost their two leaders off the ice. And I think we've underestimated how much that changed things there. And I think the Bruins are trying to find their identity a bit. And I think that I think they still have a lot there, but I think finally we're seeing them adjust to life without these two guys on and off the ice.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet's NHL insider, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast, joining us as he does every Thursday. Elliot, great stuff as always. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
You as well. Elliot Freeman joining us on the program. 615-737-1025. I want to get into something that Elliot said to Derek. I thought it was a really interesting point, and I want to break that down a little bit further. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.